This is Audible.
Find Me. Written by Carla Kovach. Narrated by Naomi Frederick. I dedicate this book to the lovely people and businesses of Lou and Polpero. Their warmth and love for these stunning seaside towns shines through. Prologue. Have you seen a little girl? She's gone missing. The woman runs across the road and into the gift shop, searching through the aisles before wiping her brow and running back out onto the path. Someone help us! Her arms are in the air as she turns in a circle, not knowing which direction to go in. Have you seen a little girl? Someone must have seen her! She shouts so loud her throat hurts. The other little girl tugs at the hem of her t-shirt. Tears run down her cheeks as she points to her ice cream that has dropped out of the cone onto the pavement. The woman grabs her hand and darts into another shop, then another. It's no good. The child is gone. Her heart is breaking as she gasps for air. It's as if the life is being sucked out of her. She can't breathe, her vision is blurred, and her whole body feels heavy, like it's being weighed down by an anchor. Passers-by stare through windows. Some stop to take photos. Others stop to readjust shopping bags as the straps dig into their arms. But not one of them stops to ask her why she's so distressed. For her, time stands still. If only she could go back 5 minutes and prevent what had happened. But it's okay saying that now, especially as it's too late.
Someone help us!
She collapses onto the road, and the man she was helping is crying too. The screaming child is almost bursting her eardrums, while all she can think about is the missing child.
We can't find her! Please help us!
People keep walking by, most not willing to stop. A woman runs over.
I've called the police.
The police? It's real now. The police are coming and the little girl is missing. Her gaze darts up and down the road in the hope that someone is bringing the little one back. But no one is coming towards them carrying a child. She glares at him as he stands there looking helpless. What can he do? What can either of them do? All the woman can keep repeating is the little one's name, followed by, "She's gone," and, "We lost her." That's the truth.
Please find her,
she yells. Please find her. The woman would give her life to find the child. She places an arm around the man.
I've lost her,
he cries. And he has. He lost her. 1. Kate. Monday, the 10th of October. I'm up out of bed before 6, as I always am in the week. With a huge mug of coffee in one hand, I enjoy the silence that only exists in this house before 7 in the morning. This is my time, when the children are asleep, and my husband Damien is still lying there waiting for his alarm to go off. It's also a day where I need a bit of time to think about the past. My finger presses the Facebook app on my iPad, and I flick straight onto the Remembering Baby Jess page. Jess died 25 years ago to the day, which means I will do what I always do on this date. I will start the day by posting a photo of Jess. Selecting one I love, I start making a post. My gaze lingers on her gummy smile as she rattles the ladybird that is attached to her wrist. I don't know what to type underneath because I'm running out of things to say. Every year, I write how much we all miss her, but that's not the truth. I'm the only one left who misses her. I type in a simple, "Thinking of you, baby Jess." I can't say things that come so easily to other people, like I know she's with Nanny in heaven or the angels are looking after her. I don't believe that to be true. But I can see why thoughts like this give people comfort. They won't help me. I've noticed that some local businesses have started advertising underneath the very occasional posts that I make, and I slam my fist onto the kitchen table. This page is for information about her, not for spreading the word on the Catch of the Day special. I want to know if anyone knows more about how she died that day. I bite my lip and delete the offending post. My mind mulls over what Jess would look like now if she was still alive. She'd probably have light brown hair like mine. Maybe it would be longer or shorter. She'd have the darkest chocolate brown eyes. Wait, were Jessica's eyes more of a hazel color? My skin is more like my mother's, with her Spanish roots, but Jessica was fairer with her pink cheeks, more like our father. I'm athletically built and strong. I wonder if she would have been built the same, or would she have hated running and swimming? How long do I keep this up? Maybe it's time to close the page and leave her memory be. I know that would make my husband Damien happy. He's uncomfortable with me bringing this up every year. I turn the screen off just as he walks in. He whistles as he ruffles his damp hair with a towel. His chirpiness annoys me slightly. We've been married long enough for him to know what today means to me. He looks at me with his lips pressed together. I don't always say much about the Jess page because he worries that she's the reason I won't give our children any freedom. And he's right. A life can be lost in a matter of seconds, and I won't let that happen to my girls. I'm their mother and their protector, and I will do my job to the best of my ability, even if it kills me. I'll get breakfast started if you want to go up and shower. He leans in and kisses me on the head. I haven't forgotten. I know what day it is. I grab my iPad, anger still showing in my face from the advert that was posted. She wouldn't want you to be like this. Damien's right. I know he is, but I'm not ready to let her memory die too. I can't let her go. That's as much as I can tell him. The rest I will keep to myself. Damien sees my mind whirring and my bottom lip trembling. He hurries over and wraps his strong arms around me. Please, Kate, for our marriage and our children, you have to stop dwelling on the things you can't change or do anything about. Look what you're doing to the kids. Instantly, I know he's not talking about me keeping this Facebook page. It's about how I am with our children. I pull away from him. He doesn't understand what guilt is like, and I will never be made to feel that bad again. The burden I carry is more than enough. I just want to protect them. You're smothering them. I love them. I love them too, but I don't stop them going out with their nan or going to birthday parties. You won't even let them play in our neighbours' gardens with their kids. It's getting ridiculous, and my mum is starting to take it personally. All she wants to do is take them to the park or for a picnic. He's right. My children barely have any friends. I don't trust anyone. My father has never seen them, and he never will. He gave up on finding out the truth about Jessica. I would never give up on my children. You won't even let them play in our own bloody garden because you think a psychotic killer is going to climb over our fence and snatch them. Children need a bit of freedom. What are you going to do in a few years when they're teens? Lock them up? They're only 4 and 5. They're still babies. I can't think about them being teenagers. It's too far away. That's something I'll have to deal with when the time comes. They are not babies anymore. They need friends. It's not normal to keep them cooped up the way you do. This is getting ridiculous. He's right. But I don't know how I can change. By overprotecting them, I'm hurting them, but I can't let what happened to Jessica happen to Millie and Rosie. They're my world. My phone rings, breaking the silence, and I'm glad. It vibrates across the table, and I reach it before it falls. Hello? I nod and make a few noises to show that I'm listening before ending the call and gazing over at Damien. I have to go into work early. Brett is going to be a bit late in, and there's no one to supervise the pool for the early sessions. Great. We'll talk about this later. Damien kisses me on the cheek. You go and get ready. I'll make you some toast. Then I'll take the kids to school. I don't have to be at my first job until 9:30. I swallow. Can you make sure you wait for them to go in? Don't leave them. Watch them actually go through the door. Millie is in a nursery class, so security is a little tighter. But Rosie has to wait in the playground. He shakes his head and his body language becomes rigid. The vein on his temple twitches, a sign that he's getting aggravated. This is exhausting, Kate. I'm their dad. What do you think I'm going to do? Leave them and run before I've handed them to a teacher. Please stop this, and if you don't delete that page, I'd say our marriage was going down the pan. I can't do this for much longer. It's exhausting. That's the first time he said those words about our marriage. But he's always blamed my page, as if that is the cause of my overprotectiveness. I want to scream at him. It's not the page. It's what happened to Jess. It pains me, but I must leave him to deal with the children so that I can get to work. I want to scream and shout. If it was down to me, I would never have gone back to work yet. The children are still so young. But Damien thought it was for the best, and that it might cure my anxieties. He can't see how much I'm already sacrificing. A tear trickles down my cheek. I'm a terrible person. Look. No, you're not, and I didn't mean to say what I did. I love you, okay? But I want you to start thinking of ways to find closure. 25 years is a long time. I'll delete the page. The last thing I want is to lose him. I wipe my wet cheek and check the time. The hotel awaited me, and I'd soon be running late. You'll feel better for it. Letting go of it will help, I promise. Now, go and get ready before we're all late. I force a smile and check the time again on my iPad. Unless I get a move on, I'm going to be seriously late. You're right. I'll delete it later. After showering, I put my tailored shorts and polo shirt on over the top of my swimsuit, ready for a day of work. I quickly log on to Facebook and check the page. There are no new comments or messages, so I swipe it away. Before heading out to work, I creep into the girls' bedroom and kiss them both gently on the cheek. "Mummy loves you," I whisper as I remove a hair from Millie's mouth. I step gently down the stairs and back into the kitchen. Bye, love. Damien pulls me close to him and kisses me. It's like everything he said to me earlier has all been forgotten. See you later. Here, I made you this. He reaches towards the table and passes me a slice of buttered toast. Love you. My face and smile tells him that I'm not the same person that he was speaking to only a few minutes ago. But inside, she still exists, gnawing away. Before I pull off the drive, I pretend to eat my toast with one hand, and I check the page again with the other. What he doesn't know won't hurt. My heart bangs as I click on the notification. It's an article in a local Cornish paper about Jess, published today. As I scan through it, my blood begins to boil. How come they contacted my dad when they were writing about it, but missed me out? I'm the one who cares about what happened to her. I'm the one who keeps her memory alive. It's me, all me, and they left me out. I hate them. Then a message pops up, and as I read it, I go cold. I know what happened to your sister. 2. Kate. I check my watch as the pool starts to empty. Some of the parents dawdle with their fussing babies as they say their goodbyes. Today was another success for the baby swim program. that I can't revel in my success at suggesting it, not with that message on my mind. Will Wilcox. The name is as ordinary as any. He has no photos or information that I can see on his profile, which is why I sent him a friend request. He still hasn't accepted, so I must conclude that, once again, someone is playing about with me. The account is probably fake. So many people have done this to me over the years. They don't realize how cruel they're being. What would Damien say if I told him about the message? Firstly, he'd be angry that I didn't close the page, so telling him isn't an option. Secondly, he'd tell me that we've been here before lots of times, and each and every message had turned out to be nothing. Sad people with nothing better to do. Some turned out to be teenagers playing a joke. Others were untraceable fake accounts. Heartless, I know. But it's true. Years ago, I'd call the police with every message, but they soon tired of me. They followed them all up, but every one of them turned out to be nothing. I can't call them again. Hearing the pity in their voices as they offer me the numbers of helplines for bereavement charities merely makes me angry. I don't want their pity again, so I won't call them. I realized a long time ago that I'm alone. Jess is nothing to them. She's a closed case. Besides, the messenger hasn't given me anything of any use. No, I'll sit on the message and see if I get another. And if I do, and it looks convincing, I'll follow it up myself. At least I'll do a proper job. Jess deserves that. The article runs through my mind. I wonder if my dad has read it yet. I take a deep breath as I gaze across the pool again. I need to forget the message in the article for now. I try to fill my head with more positive thoughts. It's the only way I'll get through the rest of my shift. I'll be finishing work soon, and I can't wait to pick the girls up. They're always ecstatic to see me. My muscles twitch with anticipation. I want to hold them and ask them how their day was. I hope they had a lovely time, but I also hope that they missed me and tell me that they'd rather be with me all day. The more I toil about that message, the more I think of my girls and how much I need to be with them all the time. Maybe I could tell them to tell Daddy that they want me to be at home all the time. No, I stop that train of thought. If I carry on the way I have been, I will definitely lose him. And I don't want that to happen. We've been a bit divided lately. He wants me to loosen up as a parent, focus on getting a life of my own back, and I want to keep a closer eye on the girls. It was easy when they were babies, but now they run off when we're out. They hide in our large garden, and they keep asking if they can go to friends' houses. But all I want is to keep them within my line of sight. Even just the thought of all that is giving me palpitations. I inhale, taking in the smell of chlorine, feeling sweat beads forming at my brow. The chatter is dying down, as some people have left for the changing rooms. I glance at the pool, where one of my mothers is smiling at her baby, little Jake. She throws him into the air, and then she catches him. His giggles are a delight to watch. As the other parents leave the pool, cradling their babies, I smile. Only the one woman still remains waist-high in the water. Everyone loves baby swim, and I'm really starting to relax into my job more. Seeing the little ones gurgle and laugh brings me a sense of joy that I didn't know I could feel. The tiniest baby lies in the arms of a muscular man, and I smile as the baby reaches for his beard and begins tugging his hair. Sadness washes over me, because all I can think about is my own children, again. I'm obsessed. I know I am. But I can't help it. I'd still rather be at home than here, working. I hear a scream. Then I see the woman splashing in the water with her baby. Without a second thought, I dive straight into the deep end and swim towards them. I can't see. I reach around for the infant and miss. For a flash of a moment, I see Jessica's fine baby hair and that red hat, the only thing left behind. Everything seems dark now, like I'm being whirled in the water and weed is gathering around my ankles, pulling me deeper. I jolt back into action and come up shaking. I can't let this baby down. Not like I did Jessica. My heart pounds as I reach out and snatch the little one in my arms. I can't stop shaking, and I hold the baby closely, fearing that I might drop him, or I'll slip. For a second, I thought that the baby might die and it would be my fault. If I'd had my eye on the pool instead of being consumed with my own thoughts, I'd have been in there quicker. A tear builds up in my eye, but the water dripping off me conceals it as it bursts and runs down my cheek.
What the hell are you doing?
The mother snatches baby Jake from me and holds him to her chest.
He was drowning. You shouted, I saw...
The eye sees what it wants to see. I realize what I've done.
We were playing, and you scared the life out of us.
Baby Jake begins to bawl, his face getting redder with every piercing scream. Playing. I'm so sorry. I just heard you scream and...
And you didn't think to look.
She stroked her baby's head. It's okay, Jake. Shush. I had Jess on my mind, but I couldn't tell her that. Glancing around, the muscular man shakes his head and leaves. The woman gets out of the pool, bouncing Jake on her hip, grabs her towel, and heads towards the changing rooms, shaking her head and muttering to herself.
I'm sorry,
I call again, but it makes no difference. She tuts and hurries away. I can still hear the baby bawling his eyes out from here. What have I done? As I reached into that water, I saw Jessica. It was as if I'd entered another world, one where I had a chance of saving her. But then, it wasn't her. Tears slipped down my cheeks. If Jake had died, or I hadn't been able to reach him on time... Swallowing, I wiped my face. That didn't happen. In fact, all the upset had been my fault. If only someone had done that for Jessica. If only I could have saved my sister. As I close my eyes to get my breath back, I imagine jumping into a bottomless ocean so vast that it would be impossible to find anything or anyone. It's not blue like people always imagine. It's more like the waves have disturbed the seabed. Sand and grit are coming at me from all angles. Through the murkiness, I see my baby sister, and the more I swim towards her, the further away she gets.
Kate?
Nadine, the receptionist, is standing at the door.
Oh, Kate, what happened?
I go to talk, but instead I sob. Nadine runs over, her hair escaping into my sodden eyes as she hugs me, even though I'm soaked through and smell of chlorine.
Come on, sweetie, it's all going to be fine.
It's not going to be fine. I'm in such big trouble.
What have I done?
Gripping her arm, I'm so thankful that she's here. I want to tell her about the message I received in the article, but she doesn't know the significance of today. Kate, Brett stands at the door, and Nadine releases me. Boss told me to step in. He wants to see you in his office. I swallow, knowing that I'm in huge trouble. My manager won't care one bit about my personal life, not when the safety of our customers depends on me being present. I lost concentration in a job where losing concentration can cost lives. And now I have to accept the consequences. 3. Kate. I hurry out of my manager's office in my soaking wet clothes before bursting into tears. The woman made a complaint, and I have been issued with a first warning. From now on, I get to stay behind a desk, booking people in, while Mr. Croft decides what to do with me.
Kate, what happened?
Nadine brushes down her smart grey hotel-issued suit and furrows her brows. I got a warning.
Kate, everyone here has had a warning at some point. Croft is a miserable git. You misread a situation, but better to jump in and help than sit back and wait.
Her concerned smile warms me slightly. At least she's on my side. She's trying to make me feel better, but I also appreciate that Croft was right. I should have had my mind on the job.
Come through to the back. You look like you need a drink.
She leads me through to the office behind reception. Then she flicks the kettle on. I remain standing, not wanting to dampen her chair, and check my phone while she spoons some coffee into the cups.
Are you okay?
What am I meant to say? I'm dwelling on a message about my dead baby sister. My dad knew that an article was going to be published today on the anniversary of her death, and he failed to tell me. Should I mention that I spend all day anxious about my children? That I think the nursery will lose Millie or that Rosie will escape from school? I want to be with them all day, all of the time. I trust myself and I trust Damien to look after them. If anyone else were to look after them, I'd feel like my insides were churning. I will be. I just want to forget today. I feel like such an idiot.
You're definitely not an idiot.
She places the hot steaming drink in front of me.
I totally lost it, and I don't know how I messed up so badly. It can happen to the best of us.
And now I'm on desk and cleaning duties. I'm going to spend all my time picking up dirty plasters from the changing rooms and checking people into the pool. And I'll never get another job. I realize I've gone off on one.
Just keep your head down and it'll all blow over. I'm sure you won't be picking up plasters forever.
Thank you.
I've only spoken to Nadine a few times, but I like talking to her. I open my phone again and she catches sight of my screensaver.
Oh, they're gorgeous. How old?
4 and 5.
Lovely ages. Wait till they turn into teens. My two spend all day hating me and glued to Minecraft. Hold on to them for as long as you can. Are they enjoying school?
Nodding, I take a sip of coffee. Yes, Rosie started primary in September, and Millie is in the nursery class still. I stop talking and stare at the floor.
I can tell there's more bothering you. You know how good I am at listening.
How did you feel when yours started school or nursery? Nadine let out a snort, followed by a little laugh.
It broke my heart into a million pieces. With each of them, I cried like a baby.
She pauses and looks at me.
Then I realized that they were having the time of their lives. They'll be playing with other children all day, getting tired out so you can enjoy some downtime at night. And I hate to say it, but they're probably not missing you. My little terrors didn't even want to come home when I picked them up. Ungrateful gits.
She shrugs.
I don't think I've asked you this before, but what got you into swimming?
In my teens, I swam for my school, and I loved the thrill of the race. I have a few medals. I trained as a swimming teacher. It's all I ever wanted to do, and now I've ruined my career. Damien had encouraged me to take up swimming again, and I did for a while when I was teaching the girls. I remember them kicking their legs while holding onto the pool gutter. Within weeks, they progressed from using the pool noodle to doing the doggy paddle. At their young ages, both can now do breaststroke and front crawl. They will never drown. I have made sure of that. Nadine places a hand on my back and tilts her head.
It'll all be okay. No one was hurt and you haven't blown it. Things will feel better in the morning after you've slept on it. If you had really put any lives at risk, he'd have sacked you. All you did was startle a mother. No harm done.
She paused and smiled.
A swimming pro, I should have known. I mean, look at you.
Her sleek black hair falls forward as she points.
Those arms, I can tell they have strength, not like mine.
She lifts hers up and wobbles the flesh just below her blouse sleeve.
I jiggle, and I can tell you don't. I see the way you lift those crates of towels, and I totally covet your toned legs. but I covet cake more.
You're funny. Nadine does cheer me up.
I know. I'm definitely the funniest person in this building, so if you want to have a laugh, always sit with me at lunchtimes.
I know I'm frowning as the tension in my forehead is a clue. I should leave her office and take a shower before I head out to pick the girls up.
Have I upset you?
No, sorry, it's me, I blurted out. My sister drowned 25 years ago today. My mind was on that while I was watching the pool. She was only a baby.
Nadine tilts her head. I'm so sorry. That's why you learned to swim so well.
And that's why I can't bear my children being out of my sight. Leaving them kills me every day, but I have to try to make things normal for them. I shake my head and force a smile, hoping that I haven't said too much.
Look at me with my pity party. I've only been here a few weeks and I'm already sharing my life's misery with you.
Shaking my head, I smile.
I know what will help. Cake. I know there's a stash in the cupboard. Chocolate or carrot? Say carrot and we can't be friends. Vegetables don't belong in cake.
She turns around to rummage through the snack cupboard. Crisps and packets of biscuits begin to fall out.
What's the time?
Nadine checks her watch.
Almost 3:30. Damn!
I grab my keys and bag. I'm late picking the girls up. I have to go.
Then go. We can do cake another day.
Thank you. I run out of the door in my damp clothes, passing several people entering the hotel. My car is at the back of the car park in the staff area, and I can't get there fast enough.
My girls, they need me.
Millie can't get out of nursery until I actually get there, but with Rosie it's different. I know a teacher normally waits with the children, but what if they left her because it's so windy and chilly? Maybe the teacher didn't notice her because I know Rosie likes to sit on the dwarf wall that is enshrouded by bushes. She's on her own and scared, I can feel it. My heart pounds as my mind's eye feeds me images of her leaving the playground to look for me after the teacher has gone back into the school. My worst nightmare is coming true. She knows the route home. Maybe she tried to walk. A twig almost hits me as a gust of wind propels it in my direction. A few raindrops begin to fall.
Rosie, someone has taken her. I know it. It'll be all my fault if she's gone.
My phone rings, so I answer on hands-free as I start the engine.
Hello? Kate, where are you?
Damien sounds concerned.
I'm on my way. Has the school called?
The nursery has. I'm just leaving to get Millie now.
Something has happened to her, I know it.
My heart is banging in my chest.
Kate, calm down. I'm sure Rosie's...
I cut the connection. She's not fine. The school hasn't called. I press my foot on the accelerator and speed out of the car park, nearly crashing into a car entering. Slamming on my brakes, I take a deep breath and start again as the man mouths angry words at me. When I take my mind off the things that are important to me, bad things happen. Really bad things. 4. Natalie started to pack up for the day. Every man and his dog had wanted their finest Cornish ice cream, despite the wind howling the way it had been all week. That's what happens after a death. People sympathy buy. She thought people might avoid her, with them not knowing what to say. But they'd all come out buying ice cream in support. And now she was exhausted. She needed time to nurse a glass of whiskey alone, while she thought about how Alan's life had been cut short. He was fit, always up with the birds and ate a healthy diet. But a heart attack got him in the end. Natalie slammed a lid on the chocolate chip. Then she pressed it hard, as if it were to blame. Ice cream. That had been his only downfall, and he'd eaten lots of it. All that sugar and fat got him in the end. She grabbed the local rag and skimmed the pages until she stopped on the article. Community in shock as much-loved ice cream man Alan Thomas dies of a heart attack. Why wouldn't the local paper run an article? He'd been a pillar of the community all his life, and his parents had owned the shop before him. She scanned through it, all of it good. They didn't see what she saw. Alan was far from the perfect husband. All day people had popped in with cake. That's what people do when they face the grief of others. They give food and sympathy, both of which made her uncomfortable. She stared out of the shop window, transfixed by the power of nature. With this savage landscape on their doorstep, Alan finally died of a heart attack. Not from boating, sea swimming or abseiling, all dangerous pursuits of his in the past. Danger splashed up the harbour walls, spray hitting any unsuspecting person who strayed too close to the edge. She'd watched the fishing boats being cleaned after their catch, the workers on them swaying back and forth as they washed away the blood and grime of the day. During happier times in their marriage, they loved to walk around the fish market, taking in the boxes of mackerel, lemon sole, and John Dory. That's what it was all about. The dangers and perils of the sea gave them the best seafood. It didn't come much fresher. She reached into the fridge and grabbed the pale and lumpy cottage pie that Laura had made for her. That was as good as it was going to get. She shook her thoughts away. Even after all the accusations she had thrown at Laura, when she thought it was her who was having an affair with Alan, Laura had proved she was still her friend. She should be grateful, and she was. She checked her phone to see what the weather was going to be like the next day. Sun always equaled ice cream sales, and she hoped for sun, even in October. If only Alan had life insurance, but both of them decided not to bother. Big mistake. The stormy outlook could do one, or it was going to be a frugal winter for her. Frugal and now lonely. What a combination. She grabbed a flaked chocolate out of the jar and began eating it as a tear slipped down her cheek. Had he ever loved her? That was a question she'd never be able to ask him now. She flicked over to another page in the paper, and an article caught her attention. Baby Jessica, 25 years on. That case had broken her heart at the time. It had broken everyone's heart. But now Jessica was no more than a lesson that the media rehashed now and again, to remind people to watch their children when walking by the harbour and on the pier. Today they were going for it large, with it being a big anniversary date. She almost choked on her chocolate as she read it, and held the sobs back. Damn, Nat. Pull yourself together. She closed the paper and scrolled through Facebook. So many condolences, she didn't know how she was ever going to get through them. Then she stopped on the Remembering Baby Jess page. Many people believed it was the father's fault for not supervising his baby properly. Others speculated as to whether someone else was involved in her drowning. An accidental drowning was believable. Drunk father left in charge of tiny baby. It's so easy to lose concentration for a moment. Shaking her head, she scrolled down the other posts on the page, clicking on some of the comments. Two restaurants had planted adverts under the posts on the page, telling tourists about their daily specials. She let out a sigh, wondering when it became okay to be that morally bankrupt. But then again, social media was morally bankrupt in many ways. She clicked on another picture, a tiny baby with swirls of wispy brown hair, and her gummy little mouth filled the profile picture box. Bright eyes and peachy skin. She was a beautiful baby, and if she and Alan had had children, she'd have wanted a baby that looked just like Jessica. She often wondered what it would feel like to cradle her own little baby in her arms, a warm bundle that she'd do anything for. But it wasn't to be. After several failed attempts at IVF,
Their souls had been destroyed, and they chose not to try again. The bell rang, and Mary entered, her 55 years on the planet not showing on her face at all. Natalie stood erect behind the counter with folded arms. Mary's black leather jacket had half slipped off her shoulder to reveal a low-cut leopard print top. She pulled it back on properly. "I'll take a box of your finest salted caramel for the pub." "Right." She looked through her dyed blonde fringe. "I'm really sorry about Alan. We all loved him. You more than most." That's what she wanted to say, but instead she quietly said, "Thank you." Natalie grabbed the large tub and passed it over the counter. "I'll put it on your account. How's your husband?" She emphasized the word husband, but Mary didn't take any notice. Kyle co-owned the local pub, the Old Smuggler, with Mary, who often worked in the kitchen or behind the bar. "Same as. Living it up as usual while I do all the hard work." "I saw what you put on that page, on Facebook." "What?" Mary's neatly defined brows furrowed. "The Remembering Baby Jess page. It's not the best way to advertise your specials menu. I just had to say I thought it was heartless." "Heartless? I don't know what you're talking about." She tucked her hair behind her ears. "This." Natalie pulled her phone from her pocket and scrolled to the offending post. Mary grimaced as she read the whole spiel. "But I didn't do this. I would never do something this horrible. Damn, what must everyone think of me?" "It's your pub. You manage social media and it's come from your page." She exhaled and shook her head. Blotchy pink patches began to spread from her cheeks. "Kyle does it now. Damn that drunken prick of a husband. That post needs to go, especially with it being the anniversary of her death. It'll be bad for business. It's in bad taste, and I think everyone around here will think so too. I'm sorry that you saw that, but believe me, I had nothing to do with that post. I'd never post something like that. I've got to go." She headed towards the door, shivering as she gripped the tub of ice cream. "Wait. I thought we could catch up." What she really wanted was to lure Mary into talking about the things on her mind. "How's Rachel?" She always liked to talk about her daughter like any proud mother would. Maybe she'd stay for a chat now. Mary paused. "Fit to drop, hormonal, tired. As to be expected. Anyway, I'm sorry again about Alan. But I have to get back. I need to remove that post." "Maybe we can have a drink soon. It's been a long time." Her once best friend looked sheepish, but then her shoulders dropped. "Kyle's playing golf on Thursday. Call me later, about 9:30. The pub should be quieter then, and we can arrange to do something." With that, Mary was gone. Natalie opened the Facebook page again and looked at Jessica, her insides gnarling, making her nauseous. With one swift press of a button, she closed the app and popped the phone into her pocket. No sense in dwelling on the past, but then again, there was no sense in contemplating the future either. Alan had gone just like that. And so had Jessica. She stared out at the harbour again, hypnotized by the stormy waters. The sea was unforgiving of any mistake, no matter how momentary it was. As she went to lock up, a sandwich board flew across the road outside as a gust of wind caught it. Just like that, the sign had gone from outside the tiny souvenir shop. Just like that, Jessica had gone all those years ago. 5. Kate. Finally, I pull up on our drive, and Millie waves out of the living room window, her coppery waves of hair framing her face.
"Mummy, why are you wet?"
Rosie asks,
as she waits patiently for me to assist her out of the car. I fell in the pool, sweetie. My hair is firm against my face and clumped together in a block, like I'm a Lego figure.
Are you mad at me?
I hurry out of the driver's side of the car and I unbuckle her, then help her out. I'd never be mad at you, my beautiful Rose. Mummy's mad at herself for being late. I bend down to her level and hug her closely. All that panicking was for nothing.
Mrs. Clay said it was okay. I went back in and made you a drawing. You smell funny, Mummy.
Swallowing, I pull away from her, realizing how cold I am as my polo shirt sticks to my torso. I shiver. Right now, I stink of chlorine, and I know I need to get in and have a shower. I don't know what fear and adrenaline smell like, but I'm probably oozing those too. Getting a warning had been a shock, and it wasn't something I was going to tell Damien. He'd think I was purposely sabotaging my job so that I could stay at home and smother the girls. I know I smell, baby. Come on, let's go in and see your dad and sister. I grip her hand like I never want to let her go. Damien opens the door, a shocked expression on his face, as he takes in the state I'm in. Eyes red, and I'm shaking. Has something happened? He leads me through to the living room. Millie and Rosie run upstairs together, stomping on the landing like baby elephants. I burst into tears and go to sit on the couch, but stop myself. I don't want to make everything stink as bad as I do. Damien dashes out into the downstairs toilet and comes back with a towel. I pull my wet polo shirt over my head and wrap the warm towel over my torso. He places another towel on the settee, and I sit. I thought a baby was drowning, that's why I was late. I pause. I was so scared something had happened to Rosie. My hands tremble. He places a hand under my chin and leads my gaze to his. You didn't let Rosie down. Rosie's fine. You only have to listen to them playing. Giggles came from above. You saved a baby. That's amazing. You are amazing. Come here. He wraps me in his arms, and I allow all my upset to spill out as I allow him to believe that I saved a baby. Do you want to talk about it? I shake my head and sniff. What I want to do is talk about how it felt like I was rescuing Jessica from the sea. I want to tell him about the message, but I can't. I promised him that I'd find a way to get over Jessica so that our children would not feel stifled, not dig things up in such a big way. I should have got a different job. The burden of being protector at this level terrifies me, but it's all I know. Being a swimming instructor is all I've ever done, but the lifeguard responsibilities, they might be too much. Baby Jake is fine. My sobs subside as I think of his little face, as his mother angrily snatched him off me. I'm fine. It was a shock, that's all. I think I just need a shower, a hot chocolate, and snuggles with my wonderful husband and children. He pulls away, a large smile on his face. I take in the freckles on his fair skin, the same ones that I fell in love with all those years ago. He's ruggedly handsome with his stubble. And I'm a mess. I inhale the scent of paint that always lingers on him after a day's work. I can make the hot chocolate happen. Why don't I order us a pizza and we'll have a film night? You go and get cleaned up. I'll sort the rest out.
I love you.
I love you too. Now, go. I feel like a fraud now, but I'm comforted by his affection. Before heading into the bathroom, I peer into the bedroom and I see the girls playing hospital and bandaging a teddy up. They really melt my heart. Damien's right. I need to let the past go. I need to give my girls more freedom to grow. I will find a way to finally allow Jessica to rest in peace, and that message is just like the rest. Nothing I do will bring her back, but I stand to lose all the precious things I have if I carry on the way I have been, and I will never risk losing my family. Before checking my phone, I make sure the bathroom door is locked. Several messages from work light up. Nadine and Brett are checking on me, asking if I'm okay. After turning on the shower, I send quick replies, telling them that I'm fine, and that I'll see them tomorrow at work. My finger brushes on the web browser, and I type in Facebook. It's no good. I have to check the page. As I click into that message, I see the three dots, which means the sender of the last message, Will, is about to reply. The pulse in my head is banging louder than ever, and all I want to do is shout at the screen for the sender to hurry up. The three dots vanish, and my heart drops. My friend request still hasn't been accepted. I click onto his profile again. It could even be some bored teenager like before. Shut up! It's probably not even a real profile. I'm getting needlessly carried away again. It's a troll messing with my head. People are like that. They'll revel in your deepest misery. I've seen the darker side of humanity too many times, yet I fall for it over and over again. Even the police have wiped their hands of me on this. He's gone. For now. Just as I go to step into the shower, the three dots appear once again, and I stare in hope that a message will come. I flinch at the knock on the bathroom door. Kate, you okay? Damien waits for an answer. I drop my phone on a pile of towels face down just in case he walks in, before realizing that the door is locked. Yes, I'll be 5 minutes. Great. Pizza will be here soon. I've ordered it. Kettle's on. Thanks, love. As I lather my body up, I wonder if Will has finally replied. I'm struggling to dismiss the message as nothing more than a troll. I'd never forgive myself if I didn't take it seriously. My heart is telling me I need to find a way of going back to Lou so that I can find Will. There is something I need to do, and the very thought sends sickening flutters through my stomach. I need to see my dad. That article is awful, so awful, I don't even want to show it to Damien. Why did my dad have to speak to them? I'm going to have to talk to him about what happened that day, and I'll get my answers once and for all. 6. Kate. Wednesday, the 12th of October. My heart bangs as I pull up at the house I grew up in. Once it had been pretty, with window boxes and flower beds dug into the front lawn. Now dried-up weeds are entangled against the front of the house, and the lawn is mud. I haven't seen my father since my mother's funeral 3 years ago, and that was enough. After Jess died, he did nothing but drink. My mother and I were made to feel like intruders in our home as he slurred and shouted. I couldn't help but resent him, as it was his drinking that lost Jessica. As soon as I turned 16, I left them, choosing to live in a room above a shop. Mum stood by him, and I'll never know why. I remember seeing her brave face as she brushed over his hurtful comments or tried to cover up their arguments. But he had a nasty tongue. As I take the mossy steps and open the creaky gate, I stop and peer through the bay window. I can't see him, but I know he's in. He never went out much when Mum was alive, and from what I'd heard from the neighbours I'd kept in touch with, he barely went out now. I glance back. He still has his car, but it's parked under a tree on the road, covered in dried-up berries and bird muck. He must have seen the article. If he had, I know he'd be drinking himself into oblivion, and I dread what I might find behind that washed-out wooden door. I move his old rusty pushbike out of the way and hurry to the door. It's not like I have all day. I have to be in work for midday. I swallow, wondering if I did the right thing in not telling Damien that I was visiting Dad. If I told him about Dad, I'd have to tell him about the message and the article. Knowing how I've reacted to things like this in the past, he'd have put his foot down. The last thing he needs is me going off the rails. Knocking on the door, I step back and wait.
What?
My dad's angry voice bellows along the stone hall.
Go away!
I lift the letterbox.
Dad, it's me, Kate. Please open the door.
I expected to smell alcohol and bodily fluids, but I'm surprised to smell lemon. As soon as I drop the letterbox, he's there.
Kate, come in, I wasn't expecting you.
He has a towel wrapped around his neck, like he's just been having a wash.
Go through.
I step further in, not knowing what I'll find, but I'm surprised. The kitchen shines as a ray of sunlight glints off the draining board. Taking a seat at the kitchen table, I nervously shuffle. It feels strange to be back, and I can't believe I grew up here. The dink in the wall is still there. My dad can paint over things like that, but he can't paint over the terrifying memories of him throwing things around the kitchen, destroying not only the walls, but my mother's happiness.
Do you want a drink? I've got tea and coffee.
I shake my head. No. He puts the towel in the washing machine and sits next to me.
I think I know why you're here.
Nodding, I unzip my hoodie. I saw the article.
Why, Dad?
I needed to tell my side.
And all you did was open it all up again.
I know, I know.
He shakes his balding head.
So why did you do it? You should have told them to call me and ask me about Jess.
I needed the chance to put my side over. I'm sick of the hate mail I've received over the years. I've lost friends and even jobs. I know I was a bad person, but that day, I was there.
But you were so little.
I still remember bits. That argument I'd had with your mother, it got to me. I know I drank too much on that boat, and I know I was in a state. She shouldn't have left me with Jess.
So you thought it was okay to blame her, now that she isn't here?
No.
I flinch as his hand hits the table.
Sorry, no. I didn't want to live with it any longer, and the reporters wouldn't stop calling. It got too much, Katie.
The moment he calls me Katie, I'm transported back to early childhood. When things were going well, I was always his little Katie, and he'd play dolls and ball games with me. How has he gone from the dad I occasionally remember to a bitter and angry alcoholic?
Are you... No, I haven't had a drink in a year now. Not a sip. There's none in the house. You can check every cupboard if you want. This is the new me.
I glance at the cupboard under the sink, the place he used to keep his vodka and cider.
Have a look.
Walking over to the cupboard, I open it. Bleach, disinfectant, and a few packets of over-the-counter tablets.
I wanted to call you so many times, Katie, but I knew I needed to prove myself. I'm clean of that poison. I know that I hurt your mum and you, and I regret every minute of it. This new me is an honest and open me. I am to blame for everything, and I know I can't make amends. But I want to try.
Staring right into his creased blue eyes, I wonder if he is truly capable of changing. He looks away and walks over to the patio doors, staring out at the overgrown garden.
How are the little ones? I still have the photos that you texted me. They're great, growing up so fast. I'd love to see them.
My muscles tense. He'd have to do a lot more than have a 10-minute chat with me to prove that he was responsible enough to see his grandchildren. I lived in fear as a child at his outbursts, and I'll never put Millie and Rosie through that.
Dad,
someone sent a message to Jess's Facebook page. They say that they know what happened to Jess.
I've had loads of those. The police don't want to know.
All these years my dad has been forwarding messages to the police too.
They take the details and that's it. As far as they're concerned, Jessica is a closed case and I have to accept that. I was drunk, I fell asleep, and I let her fall to her death. I've spent too many years blaming everyone else but myself. A part of my recovery is owning my mistakes, which is why I agreed to speak to that reporter. I can't make up for losing Jess, but I can accept my role in her death.
What do you remember from that day, when we got off the boat?
After getting off, your mother led me to the bench. I was so drunk I could barely stand. I closed my eyes to try and quell the nausea from the drink and the boat, but I fell asleep. It was only for a couple of minutes. When I opened my eyes, Jess was gone and we were so close to the edge. I rummaged around her baby seat. It wasn't strapped. I couldn't remember whether your mum had strapped it or whether I had. I feel my eyes filling up with tears.
Were mum and me in the ice cream shop?
He nodded. You must have been. When your mum came back, she saw me calling up and down, but I could barely stand. The police were called, but they seemed to take a lifetime to arrive. There was a huge search at the time. Then everyone said that too much time had been spent working on the idea that someone had taken her. CCTV through the town had showed nothing. No stolen babies being carried away. Too much time had been wasted when they should have been looking for her in the sea. The police concluded that Jessica had probably got caught up in rope or net under a boat before being dragged out to sea. She drowned, Kate. I let my baby drown, all because I got drunk after having a stupid argument with your mother. He began to sob.
I've never seen my dad like this, and a part of me wants to go over and hug him. I want to feel like his little Katie again, but I can't. I blame him, and I can't get that out of my head. I blame him for Jess and my turbulent upbringing. I blame him for making Mum miserable.
What did you and Mum argue about?
She didn't want to go on the boat trip. That's all it was.
She was fed up because I was already half drunk before we got on. My fault. She was right to be angry at me.
I miss Mum. I want to tell him how much it hurts that I never came to see her after I left. That I didn't come because of him. She chose him and his drunken moods over me, and I resented that. I shook away the other reason, the one that pointed the finger at me. Maybe my dad was all about facing up to his wrongs, but I wasn't there yet.
I miss her too. I wish she were here now so she could see how much I've changed. I am now the husband she deserved, but she's no longer here to see it.
He places a hand on mine as I weep, but I pull it away. Instead, I get my phone out of my bag and see that I have a missed call from Damien. A message pings through telling me that he'll pick up some more milk on his way home and that I don't have to.
What are you going to do about that message?
Not go to the police, that's for sure.
I have to go there to see for myself if it's real. I just don't know when.
Or how. I forgot that bit. How can I convince Damien that we need to go to Lou? Something about this message feels different. So certain. The message is to the point, not like the others. Besides, the police don't want to know any more, and I can't let this message go without knowing if it's real.
Don't do anything dangerous. This person could be some sort of weirdo.
G
Jess is dead, love. Nothing can be gained by going back. Tears fall, and I can't stop them. I leave my dad and run upstairs to the bathroom so that I can sort myself out. I don't want his love or his tenderness, not now. It doesn't feel right. I need some space. Slamming the door behind me, I sit on the loo seat and blow my nose. Gazing around, I can see that the bath shines and the sink is clean. I've never known my dad to be like he is now. Never. Hurrying back down, I walk into the kitchen and see him holding my phone and scrolling through photos. Sorry, Katie. I saw your screensaver and I wanted to see what the girls look like now. I snatch it back. How dare he invade my privacy like that? He only had to ask. My dad pulls out a small box, and in it are some photos. I thought you might like to look at these. You can take them with you. Your mother kept them in the loft and refused to look at them again after that holiday. I pick one up, and it's of my mum holding Jess with me tugging on her skirt. Where was this taken? Outside the cottage where we stayed. Will you come and see me again? I grab the box and hurry to the front door. This is all too much. Will you? He calls as he catches me up. I can't answer that. Glancing back at him as I open the front door, I try to see right through him, but I can't. Can a man like him ever change? Everything's closing in on me. I need to get away from this house, from the memories and from him, so I run as fast as I can as he calls after me. No, I won't be coming back. Ever. 7. Natalie. Thursday.